everybody. Welcome to another week and another episode of the Women on War podcast. I am your host, Alyssa Adkins.
And I am your co-host, Jillian Drappola. And for those of you who are just joining our podcast for the very first time, we are your not-so-average museum gals, just talking about military history, history in general, and just having a drink or two while we do it, maybe slinging an occasional joke. So, Alyssa, what are you drinking?
My normal. My go-to. One of my main men, Jameson. just Jameson.
Okay. There you go.
It's been a day. Jillian and I were already joking around about, we were saying something about females, and then it started coming out as tamales.
We accidentally I had said, for those of you who know me, you'll know that I'm like extremely goofy, where I just like say weird stuff just trying to make people laugh. So I said females, tamales. It's like tamales. The women that we're talking about today played in Havana, Cuba.
So we can say tamales.
Facts.
Tamales. Hopefully.
Tamales. We're talking about some badass tamales.
Hopefully, though, that's not like a actual Spanish word or Portuguese word. That's what I'm hoping. I really hope like that's not the case. So I'm sorry if it is and it's like jargon for something.
It's like 30 seconds into the episode and this is, you know what? But you know what? We're just going to hit this episode out of the park. Knock it out of the park. And you know what? That ties into what I'm drinking. I'm drinking straight up Miller Lite, good old beer that you would get at a baseball stadium. And that's what we're talking about today. We're talking about the Famale Baseballs, baseball team, baseballs.
If that could have not been like the most perfect like infomercial or like even an ad between innings, then I don't know what it was. Because also, you all can't see, but Jillian even like grabbed her Miller Lite as if she was in an infomercial and was just like, here is my Miller Lights. And just, she's still doing
for
it.
For Famale Baseball.
For the Famale Baseball team. She's being Vanna White as well, everybody.
Famale's Baseball.
Famale.
Yeah. And I have like the Vanna White hair going on right now. You know, it's fine. It's fine. But anyway, let's talk about the Famale's Baseball, otherwise known as the depending on what you're talking about. Mostly, we know it as the All-American Girls Pro Baseball League.
We are, we are the members of the All-American.
We come from cities nearby. We got Canadians, woo! Irish ones. We're all for one, we're all for one, we're all American.
We're all American.
Yeah! I'm sorry you all had to listen to my horrible singing.
But I'm not sorry because I was singing too obnoxiously.
Hey, it's all good. It's all good. But you know what? We're most familiar with the movie, A League of Our Own.
Heck yeah, we are.
A lot of the times, though, like after learning more about the league, because in World War II reenacting, I started... In 2019, we came up with the idea of having an American girls baseball team because the home front at reenactments is lacking severely. And when I mean lacking, I mean like, okay, great. You go to a reenactment. You're like, cool. There's a war going on. We're looking at vendors. We're looking at, you know, whatever food we're going to eat, seeing the veterans. And then you go over to the home front and there's like, great, Rosie the Riveter and like Land Army. You're just like, all right, there's more to it. And if you see like a well-dressed civilian, sometimes they're just like, oh, wow, they're really into vintage. Or they're like, you know, it's harder to spot like a well-dressed civilian. So we came up with the idea of doing the American Girls Pro Ball League. We spent a year and a half researching it, actually wrote a proposal to the actual organization. So we do the South Bend Blue Sox team. From the season of 43-44. But And the reason we chose this is because in League of Their Own, in the actual movie, they're in the movie for, I'm not kidding, like a montage of the championship. And that's it. Because we didn't want to be like, you know, Evelyn, come on, come on, Evelyn, there's no crying in baseball. You know, we didn't want to hear that like at every single event, even though we already do. It's fine. But at the same time, it's like, South Bend Blue Sox was one of the original four teams. Let's just, should we dive deep into it?
Let's go.
Lego. Okay. So it all started. The war happened. You know, Philip Wrigley, guy with the chewing gum company, inherits the Chicago Cubs from his dad. And he was fearful that the baseball stadiums were going to collapse during the war because of a lacking, you know, potentially lacking attendance. So they came up, he set up a committee and was like, how can we get the baseball stadiums to stay open during wartime? And this committee came up with the idea of having a girls' league, but they had to differentiate it from actual softball league. And they were like, okay, well, we're going to come up with a baseball league. They're going to play baseball. And so they had a issue through the first season in 1943 because the press was like, they are just playing softball because the pitching style was different than Major League Baseball. The distances between, you know, the pitching mound and home base versus, you know, first, second, third versus the length of the bases was all different. And so they decided to, you know, throughout the years, change the style that the way the game was played a little bit. Same rules. It was a mix. It was really a mix between like softball and Major League Baseball. And by the end of it, you know, by 1950, and this went through like 50, like the early to mid 50s. They finally went from underhand pitching to overhand pitching, and they played with a regulation baseball. The bases got longer, ball sizes got smaller. They played in dresses the entire time, which I should have worn my uniform. Why didn't I? Well, no.
Yes, you should have.
I know why. It's cold as heck here in Michigan today. It's not about that. It was not about that, but I digress. So when the league was formed, they were like, okay, great. How are we going to get women to play baseball? Like, where are we going to find them? So they had, ironically, everything stemmed from Chicago, and they chose like cities around the Chicago area to be like, everybody's in close proximity. We're going to leave it like that, and we're going to hunt mm-hmm. girls for these four teams. It was Racine and Kenosha in Wisconsin. It was Rockford in Illinois, and it was South Bend from Indiana. Mm-hmm. So you have the Racine Belles, the Kenosha Comets, the Rockford Peaches, and the South Bend Blue Sox. So with Chicago, you know, baseball players, hockey players, football players, they all know each other, so it's fine. So they're like, we're going to send the Canadians to go hunt for women in Canada, and we're going to go send the U.S. guys, and they're going to go across the country and find women to play baseball, which they did. And the teams consisted of 15 players, one coach or manager, a business manager, a bus driver, and a chaperone. And they found hundreds of women, talented women, all across the countries, I should say, and they brought them to Wrigley Field for tryouts. And I'm not kidding. Where is it? I have a total here. Mm-hmm. They were trained on, let's see, field position, throwing, catching, running, sliding, and hitting. And hundreds of women came out. Only 280 were invited to play in Chicago at tryouts. And only 60 women made it to the entirety of the league. And they were divvied up amongst the four teams. And with league contracts, that's these great. Women signed contracts, and they were very, very strict contracts. They were not allowed to have any other employment during the league. Their salary actually was really, really high. They were paid between $45 to $85 a week in 1943.
Which is like six. Yeah. And I guess like from now, possibly with inflation, it would be $665 per week to about $1,256 per week, if I remember correctly after reading, which is kind of crazy, but they were definitely above average for women at the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They, I mean, even on the AAGPBL website, it'll say like they were really high, like higher than some guys at the time. Mm-hmm. So you're just like, well, okay, that's awesome. But, you know, it's women's baseball during the 40s where femininity was super high. So Wrigley's wife designed the uniforms, which are taken after figure skating outfits and tennis outfits. And they're dresses. They were short dresses. In the movie, they are like really, really short right off the bat, right? A little cute little dress, like a little cap.
Yeah.
They like walk around in like their satin shorts, the baseball bats. In actuality, they were really mid-length dresses with like a belt to like cinch in the waist. And they had like a patch on their chest and like cap was their, you know, each team had their colors. And it was midway through the season, the first season, that the girls were like, I cannot pick up a ground ball to save my life. I can't. All I'm doing is picking up skirts. And that's from like oral histories that I've seen in research for the team. And they decided midway through the season, they're going to cut off their skirts right in the middle. Get it out of the way. And pitchers would actually tack the side of their skirts to the front so it got it out of the way with pitching because it was underhand pitching at the time. And it was really funny because, like, catchers, they were like, the belt was the stupidest part. It just made our waist small. There was no reason. I couldn't even lift my hands above my head to catch the ball. She was just like, oh, geez, like, is that, like, Dottie where she, like, takes her cap because she can't, like, reach her arms over her head? Is that why? But I was just like, oh my gosh. But with femininity comes charm school. And they got to go to charm school for a year.
Of course.
Just no sipping. No slurping.
You don't slurp.
Gracefully and grandly. Gracefully. And then you got Marla Hooch like in the background. Like, yeah, it's great. Those of you imagining the scene, you know what we're talking about. Other people, just imagine, like, your ear, like, stuck to your shoulder and your arms just, like, raising like you have a question. It's fine. I'll get the boys at the club. All right.
Or just watch A League of Their Own.
Facts. So charm school lasted a very, very short amount of time because of that. Because the girls played in their first season 108 games. That's a lot of games for four teams. For four teams. That's a lot. And these, some of them were like mothers and some of them were wives and, like, you know, mind you, their husbands are probably off at war, but at the same time, you're just like, that's a lot of games. Stuwell, honey.
Stuwell. Stuwell, angel. Stuwell, darling.
Facts.
I could watch that movie forever.
Oh my God. So good. So good. It makes me cry every single time. But especially Betty Spaghetti. So sad. So they played 108 games. And after, like, listening to oral histories, these women had to go to charm school, like, the next day. So one of my favorite stories from one of the women is, so we had a doubleheader. I can't remember where they were playing. But they're like, we had a doubleheader. And, you know, You're sliding in the skirts, you get like really bad strawberries. Well, she ended up getting a really bad Charlie horse in the game and she couldn't really like walk. And then she had to go to charm school in the morning in heels, in a skirt, walking up and down stairs with books on her head and a Charlie horse. Yeah, charm school didn't last too long after that one. I was like, yeah, facts though. So, you know, that femininity thing was a stronghold the entire time in the league. It was like a running theme in the league. Every girl got a beauty kit with instructions on how to use it. Like, you played baseball with a full face of makeup. Just crazy. It was insane.
I'm going to say, which is like a former softball player, you sweat a lot. Like, that is, like, there was no waterproof mascara, no like sticking foundation. So could you imagine if you were a catcher, right? And you, like, okay, we're going to use, like, if they're on as a reference, like, Dottie. Could you imagine, like, I would look like a straight-up flippant raccoon with all of the mascara on my face. Like, oh, God.
Like, in the 40s, like, beauty played a lot of the times on, like, natural beauty, right? Like, you enhanced your natural beauty. But you still had eyebrow pencils. You still had mascara. You had blush. You had lipstick. They had to play with, like, red nails, like, and lipstick. Could you, I mean, all except for, like, All the Way May. She's just, like, she looks, like, picture perfect, like, all the time. And she's like, hi, boy. All the Way May cracks me up. What if my shirt just flies open? And there, and you don't think anyone's ever seen your bosom before? Knock it off.
Wait, that's Madonna's character, right? And then Rosie O'Donnell, who says that?
Yeah, Madonna and Rosie O'Donnell. Okay. Oh my god, like, I can't. And oh my god, that it's too good, all the way around. But like, yeah, the uniforms have, and I'll post pictures of our uniforms this week on our Instagram page. And I'll send some for you so you can post on our Facebook page. But they, you know, they were like baseball tops. It was a tunic with a belt. And then instead of pants, you had a skirt no longer than 6 inches above your kneecap. So they made it like a rule. They're like, fine, if you're going to cut off your skirts, like, you have to, like, you have to leave them like a decent length.
Oh, I was just going to say, it just makes me laugh because, like, well, you went to Catholic school, so. So in the public school sector, your like skirt and your shorts literally had to be like fingertip length or like 6 inches. So that's why, like, I'm cracking up because, like, I just remember, you know, during softball season, if like our shorts, you know, it was warm outside, so we didn't wear our like pants, we would wear our shorts. And I just remember everybody always rolling them up because you basically had sliding shorts underneath. So I'm just cracking up. I'm just reliving.
Well, like, that moment. This may sound really bad, so it's fine. But like Catholic school, like my skirt length was like, you know, a decent length. It wasn't like, ooh, where's that skirt going? But I know some girls like in high school that did that, and you're just like, oh, okay. Okay. But this is also why you wear shorts underneath every single like dress, skirt. Like, you wore shorts. Catholic school has ruined me. I don't feel comfortable wearing a dress without shorts. I'm giving my secrets away.
But couldn't
here.
You, like, what? I'm just, Jillian. can you just imagine sliding in that and even just trying to move? Like, I, no, just.
Yeah. No, yeah. Like. I mean, you know, them talking about the belts was like an eye opener, but like the whole get up, right? It was just meant to attract. It was not only like meant to be like, yeah, we're women playing baseball, but we're also feminine women. And like their caps were, you know, still like the wool caps like the men had. They didn't have elastic on the back to like keep them onto their head, but their hairstyle. So they had to like either like hairspray it down or mat it down or like bobby pin the hell out of it. They had belts that didn't really like allow them to like come up past their rib cage. The skirt length, the sliding. What's really interesting is you can actually see like from oral history videos. I don't know if you've ever seen them on YouTube, but there's like oral history videos from a Grand Valley State project because one of the AAGPBL teams was in Grand Valley. It was the Milwaukee Chicks that moved to Grand Rapids. they, one of the girls was like saying, you know, oh, when I slid and I had this giant strawberry up my leg, we, our chaperone put, you know, chloroform like on it, or, you know, there's another one that I always forget the name of, but they were like, you can tell because all the girls are like fanning, like blowing on it, like trying to like get it to stop stinging because they literally had to like patch them back out and like, you're going. Because there were only 15 girls on the team. So unless they got, like, really, really hurt, they, you know, and, like, maybe call up a girl or something or just, like, you know, have, I, you know, I don't, I'm sure, like, the 15 girls, because you only need 9 to play, like, they had, you know, like, backups and they switched quite often. I can't even imagine. Actually, I'm, so we did a photo shoot. Becky and I did a photo shoot. To like be like, here's the things that like we've been working on, like the softball, you know, baseball team and everything like that. And we took a picture, like recreating an original photo of girls sliding and like getting tagged out. And I sat on the gravel for about 30 seconds, bare legged, and was like crying. I was like, no. And I was just sitting. I didn't actually slide. I was low key really terrified.
And even then, like, playing, like, I used to play beer league softball and stuff like that, or, like, co-ed softball, and I, obviously, I would wear shorts because it's in the middle of summer in Michigan, but, like, I would be, I mean, I would slide if I had to, but if I didn't have to slide, I was not going to slide. So, like, if I, if I had the opportunity to take you out, I might take you out. Like, I'm not going to slide, but I'll take you out. Because it just, it does, it hurts. And, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, these women just, you know, some of them would just slide to put on a show. Like, it's insane to even, like, think of that. Like, to get the crowd thinking, you know, to compare it to Major League Baseball, you know, these women had to do basically the same thing. And, like, I want to touch base on this because you're talking about, like, the feminine. I can't say it. I'm like Nemo right now.
Our commercial break brought to you by Miller Lite.
I'm brought to you by Jason. Okay, I got to get back on track. So to kind of go back on that, because, you know, we were talking about charm school classes and like their beauty kit and instructions, how to use it. And, you know, the women had something called like the rules of conduct, and their contracts and like rules of conduct were far stricter than the men's league. So
let's bring this up.
So part of this is like what makes me, because it goes back to like being that, having that femininity, I can't say it, feminine words. Oh my God, I suck right now. Okay, you guys all know what I'm talking about. But like having that feminine aspect to them, they could not have short hair. They could not smoke or drink in public places. They were required to wear lipstick at all times. And fines for not following the league's rules of conduct were $5 for the first offense, $10 for the second, and suspension for the third. And I want to bring up, like, one particular individual. Her name was Josephine Jojo D'Angelo. She was fired for cutting her hair short. What the crap? Like, yeah. What?
Yep. And it even, like, goes on, like, past that. Like, their rules of conduct. Like, I have them in front of me. So, like, smoking, drinking. All social engagements must be approved by the chaperone. Legitimate requests for dates can be allowed by chaperones. Like, legitimate. Does that mean, like, she weeded out the bad ones?
She's like, no, no, no.
No. She's like, no, not that one. Not that. Not that one.
No.
Like, going with the femininity, the females femininity.
Females.
Jewelry must not be worn during game or practice, regardless of type. Not even wedding rings. All living quarters and eating places must be approved by the chaperones. No player shall change her residence without the permission of the chaperone. Yep. For emergency purposes, it is necessary that you leave notice of your whereabouts in your home phone. Okay, cool. Each club will establish a satisfactory place to eat and a time when all members must be in their individual rooms. In general, the lapse of time will be 2 hours after the finish of the last game, but in no case later than 12:30 a.m. Players must respect hotel regulations as to other guests after this hour, maintaining conduct in accordance with high standards set by the league. Always carry your employee pass as a means of identification for entering the various park. Relatives, friends, and visitors are not allowed on the bench at any time. Okay, yeah, yeah. Due to shortage of equipment, baseballs must not be given a student. Right? Stool Angel. They're right there. Big no-no in the movie. Due to a shortage of equipment. Stool baby. Nope. Baseballs must not be given as souvenirs without permission from the management. No handling of balls. All right. Baseball uniform skirts shall not be shorter than 6 inches above the kneecap. I hope to know it was coming.
Like, my blanket, my comforter is over my head. No, Jimmy Dugan would be so pissed at us.
Could you imagine, like, what he would say in, like, the movie if that happened? He'd be like, Alyssa! Anyway, you know, that's rule number 11. All right. Or the bat.
Or the bat. Or the stick thing. Can't get to home without a bat.
Baseball uniforms shall be no shorter than 6 inches above the kneecaps. No short skirts, no short hair. It's, you know. In order to sustain the complete spirit of rivalry between clubs, the members of the different clubs must not fraternize at any time during the season. After the opening day of the season, fraternizing will be subject to heavy penalties. This also means, in particular, room parties, auto trips out of the way to out of the way eating places, etc. However, friendly discussions in lobbies with opposing players are permissible. Players should never approach the opposing manager or chaperone about being transferred. Friendly hello in the lobby. That is it. Outside that hotel lobby, sworn enemies is what they, yes. When traveling, the members of the clubs must be at the station 30 minutes before departure time. Anyone missing her arranged transportation will have to pay her own fare. Players will not be allowed to drive their cars past the city's limits without the special permission of their manager. Each team will travel as a unit via method of travel provided for the league. One thing I was, like, surprised about with the whole, like, baseball league is the amount of attendance they got. I don't know if you were able to, like, see figures of that, but, like, in the first season, attendance was 176,612 fans for the 43 season. Mm-hmm. And it went up from there. I think the record.
That's crazy.
I think the record for one game played, it was a doubleheader in South Bend, was 10,000 people.
That's crazy.
It was insane. And the league changed ownership 2 times after Wrigley because he didn't, like, fully believe that, you know, it could capitalize because he tried expanding in 45. He added teams, but they were larger city teams. Mm-hmm. And the reason why things worked out so well in the beginning of the league was because they were smaller cities where choices of entertainment were lacking, for a better word. Yeah. And, you know, baseball was the good old pastime. And, you know, people would spend their money at the baseball stadium, and you would go and spend your time there. And when they went to, like, Milwaukee and Minneapolis, that is a very large population in the city. Mm-hmm. And there are more choices for entertainment. A lot of people didn't want to go watch women's baseball. The stadium was bigger, so fans were farther away. The press was farther away. Like, in South Bend, in Rockford, like, women, like, fans were, like, basically sitting on top of the dugouts, just being like, oh, Betty, how's your husband? Like, they became friends, like, with the fans. And in Milwaukee, Minneapolis, it was a lot harder to do. So they decided that each team would kind of own their own team and have, like, a say in the committee as to, you know, what happened with their city teams. Mm-hmm. And expansion and things like that. So, you know, of course, the war ended in 45, but the baseball league still went on for a number of years. They played for 11 in total until 54. So you're like, that's pretty cool. And another fact that's I think is cool is almost every single girl in the league played through South Bend at least one time in her career.
Oh, that is really cool.
So I was like, hell yeah, South Bend. Ooh.
You know what I think is really interesting that I never knew is that Michigan had four teams. I don't know if you knew that. There was, I know you mentioned the Grand Rapids Chicks. There's Muskegon Lassies, which then became the Kalamazoo Lassies. And then Battle Creek Bells, which then eventually becomes the Muskegon Bells. So I think that's really cool because basically this entire league was in the Midwest, which I think is awesome to be there. Not because I'm a Midwestern gal, but that played softball her entire life. But why not?
Yeah, girl. Yeah. Well, what's interesting is in Chicago, when I was doing research for this team, they have a tri-state league still playing in Chicago. It's a nonprofit organization, and it's the World War II Baseball League. And women volunteer to play women's baseball in 40s uniforms. And they actually invited our team out to play, but COVID. So we're hoping that, you know, when things lighten up, or if they lighten up this year, we'll be able to go. But that I think what they're doing is absolutely phenomenal. And they actually play like league style, whereas we're a little bit different. Whereas like we play at reenactments, but it'll be just for fun. Like no one's really keeping score. It's more for the educational part of it because you don't see it.
I think it's one of the things too that we didn't really touch base on that I also thought was interesting. Obviously, other than our great home states having multiple teams at one point, it was like we talked about segregation last week, right, with the 404th Armed Forces Band, but there were no black female players in the league. Like they intentionally kept it segregated, which is mind-boggling because when was Jackie Robinson? Yeah. When did he become the first player? Do you know off the top of your head when Jackie Robinson became?
Oh, I'm so.
Let's see.
No.
Oh, 47. 47.
47. He was professional. Did he have a military career? Yeah. Does it say if he had a military career?
I don't remember. Let's see. Maybe military. Yes, I believe so. Yes. In 42, Robinson was drafted and assigned to a segregated Army cavalry and unit in Fort Riley, Kansas. But then he also applied for, as a side note, OCS. But still, even though he became the first, you know, black player in, you know, men's baseball, black women were not allowed to play baseball. But which also makes me, now that like the gears are going, because they go, right, they went into Canada as well. I wonder if there were any indigenous women who went out to play.
From what I understand, like I didn't see any like record of any indigenous women, but in when they played in Havana, when they did spring training in Havana, which side note, when they spring trained in Havana, they outdrew crowds more than the Dodgers.
Really?
Yep. Cause the guys were back, because this was in like the early 50s. And the Dodgers were in Havana, and the Girls League was in Havana, and they drew more crowd because they played, right? It's that thing about women, you know, in any capacity. We sometimes feel like we have more to prove, whether it be like the Wax or the Waves or, you know, in a professional setting, you know, and they they played harder, they played faster, they played a more baseball game of baseball, if you could say it. Like, the women strategically got better and better as the years went on, because going back to sliding, they didn't want to slide. So they became long distance hitters purposely, because they're like, I don't want to slide. My base coach is telling me to slide, and I'm just like, no. I will hit a home run just so I don't have to do it. No. But they did have Cuban women on the team.
Really? See, I didn't know that they had Cuban women.
Yeah. And I didn't see anything about indigenous, but I do know that they had a Negro League of baseball. Because really? There's a museum in Kansas City called the Negro Baseball League Museum. And one year, actually, it was going to be last year, I was setting up my birthday fundraiser, and I wanted to donate to the All-American Girls Baseball League. But they, you know, at the time, they didn't have donations set up on Facebook. So the Negro League had it, and it's based out of Kansas City, and you can, like, go visit their Facebook page, and I highly recommend doing it because it's amazing. And that's something that I love that the movie did, was that they incorporated, I mean, it was a small scene, but they incorporated the Black women into the movie, where, you know, they threw a baseball and it, like, kind of knocked around, and you know, a Black team caught it.
Interesting. Did not know that.
Yeah. 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 So it's very interesting. And what I love about reenacting all this stuff is we are getting, fortunately, like, shameless plug for the team, we are getting national recognition for, like, what we're doing. Mm-hmm. It's slowly building. But at our setups, you know, we were thinking about, like, how can we set this up at events? Like, we're going to be in, like, uniform. Obviously, like, there may not be a baseball field around, so how are we going to do this? So we decided we're going to set up our tents as hotel rooms, because the girls weren't camping. They were in hotel rooms or boarding houses. And we're going to have a scrapbook or a couple scrapbooks of the team of South Bend. But we're also going to have history on the Negro League as well.
Good.
Because that is something that we decided as a team, that we wouldn't be doing the sport, the camaraderie that the women had, the league's justice, if we weren't doing everybody.
That's true. No, I totally agree. I think there needs to be representation.
Yeah. Because I think it's amazing. Like, if you look at Black athletes during World War II, right? I think one of my favorite facts that maybe not a lot of people know about is our guy, Joe Louis. Right? Boxer. Detroit boxer. He got drafted, and his military service, he came up with a more rigorous fitness program, which is now kept and still run and used by the military, and it's called Yo Basic Boot Camp. And he designed all the fitness and all the, you know, courses and obstacle courses and everything. He designed them. And so Joe Louis designed boot camp.
He designed. Interesting.
Let's finish this episode up, and we'll talk about the Negro Leagues, which, before we got on air tonight, Alyssa and I were talking about how, you know, in the 40s, there wasn't a lot of information from the 40s, but I did find out that two women went to the Chicago tryouts for the AAGPBL, and they were promptly turned away because they were Black women. But Toni Stone, Connie Morgan, and Mamie Johnson were the three women in the 50s who played men's professional baseball.
Because who runs the world? Girls.
Girls. But girls. Mammy Johnson is the only female pitcher in men's professional baseball history, which I think is pretty. Who runs the world? Girls. So,
girls.
Girls. So
that's
been I think that's
I was gonna say that's been a pretty common theme for us the last month. Who runs the world? Yeah, girls.
Maybe we should just like contact Beyonce, see if we could change like our theme music
to a Beyonce song.
Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty sure she'd be down for it.
I mean,
we could try.
I mean, I also quoted a song that says, "Who should run the world? It's girls." I quoted it last week. It was the Growlers.
Max.
We could do
who
that.
Who should run the world? Yes. See? They agree.
It's girls. It's true. Thanks, Growlers. You wonderful LA based band.
Be kind of our song.
And, right? Make our intro song, please, and thank you. No, like, speaking of who runs the world, there was, you know, women were involved in the Negro League, not just as the three players, but also as the business manager. It was Effa Manley and her husband. They owned the Newark Eagles, and Effa was the business manager, and she is the first female to be nominated and inducted into the Hall of Fame. And
what league,
she had
what league was this? Because I don't think it's quite mentioned.
It was the Negro League in
Negro
the 50s.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure because I wasn't sure if that was stated already. I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. It was in the Negro League in the 50s, and they had multiple, you know, high profile guys that are inducted in the Hall of Fame today from the Negro League playing for the Newark Eagles. So I think that's pretty amazing. But I need to go and make a girls trip to Kansas City, because that's where the Negro League Museum is. And I'm like, let's go.
Yes.
Another road trip.
But as you said, Effa Manley was inducted. I think she was inducted in 2006, if I am correct.
Let me look it up real quick.
Yes, Hall of Fame induction was 2006. She also, there is a book, and it's called Negro Baseball Before Integration. And they, her and her husband, essentially owned Newark Eagles from 1935 to 1948. I do wonder, however, though, if there's that possibility as to why they relatively stopped owning it. It's because Jackie Robinson, I believe, like we said, in 47, became the first black man to enter the MLB. So that's kind of interesting, and I wonder if anything else really had to deal with it. That's why they stopped. But
that's a good question.
I'm actually looking up, as like we're kind of researching a little bit more like in depth, I'm looking at pictures of Abe Manley and Effa, and I think it's incredible because I'm pretty sure Effa was also a woman of color. Which is even greater that she was inducted. You know, I mean, we've been talking about this, how women they should have these opportunities to be inducted into things. And the fact that she was inducted as a woman, but truly as a black co-owner of a baseball team, right, in the Negro League, I think is also something that's really great. And
people should start researching more.
Yes. Stop looking at it just surface level, because I'm reading right now, and it says that her greatest contribution, or one of her greatest contribution as an owner, would come in her final years with the Eagles, following Branch Rickey's signing of Jackie Robinson from the Negro Leagues to play Major League Baseball. She fought for compensation for team owners and recognition of Negro League contracts. So she actually was the main marketer for the Eagles.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
The promoter of it. And this is, I'm like, what? What? This is amazing.
Oh, yeah. I think it's really crazy because, you know, we have Effa Manley who is inducted. And then, you know, it says, like, based on what I'm reading about Effa Manley is that she was born into an interracial family, but her mother's husband was black, was not actually her biological father. However, she just continued to live as a black woman. And I think that's even more empowering to know that part of her, you know, she still chose and she still identified as that, which is, you know, great, good for her, you know, especially seeing some, I'm sure, you know, just kind of some trials and tribulations, also co-owning, you know, a baseball team and really being the spearhead of that team. And then we also had Olivia Taylor, who was the first woman to own a Negro League team. So Olivia Taylor actually owned a Negro team before Effa Manley and her husband. She was the owner of the Indianapolis ABCs following the death of her husband, C.I. Taylor, in 1922. So, like, 10 to 20 years earlier, Olivia Taylor owned a team, which is amazing. And then even more contributions of rights with black women in sports and baseball, specifically during segregation. Toni Stone was the first black woman to play in the Negro League, which I think is also just crazy and wonderful. And she was able to get a shot on a professional team because she played for so long in semi-professionals. And then you have Mamie Johnson, who you briefly talked about, I think beforehand. And then Connie Morgan, who also played in the Negro League. And it's just women. Black women kicking ass and taking names and doing their best to desegregate and just make their way through.
Yeah.
So many contributions to these women.
And the fact that they held their own and they played professional men's baseball, like, it's nothing against the AAG PBL. But, like, it's just like today. There was, like, what was it? It was either this, I think it was last year. During, like, college football season, there was a girl who, she was the kicker on the soccer team, and they, like, drafted her for the football team. And she played in, like, a national, like, college game. And everybody was like, oh, yeah, it's the kicker. And she, like, made headlines. And I think it just shows that, like, yeah, women can play sports just as well, if not maybe better.
I mean, I totally agree. And I think, you know, we've said for the past month, like, women really need to get, that recognition. I am curious, though, to what type of prejudices these women did face. So, I mean, on top of being a woman of color, right, that is a huge, huge prejudice all on its own. But I wonder if what other things that they faced along the way, if it was by teammates, right, for those that played in the Negro League, if they were more accepted with that. But also, too, because as you said about the football player, the soccer player, the kicker, I do know that she specifically had received threats and, like, you know, just – sexual harassment and stuff along those lines. And it's really infuriating, not, you know, because we're women, right? And so this is something that we have to deal with every day. But the fact of the matter is, and we've seen this as we've talked about all these badass women, is that when women step up to these roles, they get sabotaged, they get, you know, just the harassment, all of these things, and it's unacceptable. And, like, we have to, and, like, I'm fine with making this political because it should be. You know, women all throughout history have had to face these things, like, these trials because men don't give us the space to do it. And so when we are able to stand up, go after what we want, we should be able to have it as an equal playing field, right?
Right.
And so I think these women just continue to pave the way. I mean, not just for, you know, the All-American Girls Baseball League, but also these incredible women like Olivia Taylor, Effa Manley. I'm trying to think of everybody's name because now I'm like, oh, I'm flustered.
Right. Who is it? I'm curious about is not only like the, you know, the threats or maybe something that these women got when they, you know, were playing or because that they were playing men's baseball. I'm kind of curious as to what the relationship was like on the team. Like, was there a camaraderie on the team or was it the case where it's like, well, we're not really going to throw to you because you know, our girl, you're not really part of us. Or like in Mamie Johnson's case, because she was the pitcher, you know, did she, you know, what was like her kind of story like? Because the pitchers, like, you know, they can make or break the game.
Yeah.
And we can end this real fast here. So I'm curious. I think we should, I want to dive more into research on this and find out what's going on.
I mean, you know, this is obviously, this is a combination of both wartime and sports, right? However, there should be enough information out there now that we should be able to deep dive and research.
Yeah.
It's also a topic that I would like to revisit, though, to be honest, about now that we, you know, we touched a little bit on the Negro League and these women, but I think it'd be awesome to, like, really do a deep dive and like what if they had any type of war effort contributions other than baseball at the time. I think that would be pretty cool.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But final thoughts? I think that is final thoughts. Do you want to share your final thoughts?
I think
on the whole baseball and
I mean I relatively summed it up a little bit. You know, we see essentially, you know, women go into these roles because the men are away, right? They're serving in the war. And that tends to be a theme all throughout warfare. The men are gone, the women step up to take these roles. But then when the men come back, the women have to go back to being wives and, you know, so on and so forth. However, we really see that transform after World War II, right? Not only because of waves, wet, you know, the whole nine yards, essentially. But we see it with baseball as well, and then women finally get their own league, and it kind of continues. And then you start seeing this transformation into softball leagues, and there's all of, you know, I played softball. You played softball, didn't you?
Yes, in grade school.
Okay, but you still played softball.
Facts. I knocked it out of the park in T-ball.
You go, Jillian. So, I mean, we see, like, the rise of this and giving women a place, right, with sports. However, though, it came at the cost of keeping everything very feminine, right? Couldn't really truly identify, you know, well, like, if they were – what if they were – lesbians, right? Like, we were talking about that documentary that's on Netflix of two, what's it called, A Secret Love, yeah. And you know, that documentary of how these two women fell in love, but they lied all throughout their life because they were so afraid. And also wonder if that was a kind of a common theme, right, throughout the league, just because also it was very quote-unquote taboo, right, at the time. Women couldn't really explore their sexuality. So I wonder if there was any, like, fines or anything along those lines that would come from it. Women had to fucking wear makeup. You're sweating in the Midwest, of all places, which is, like,
And they didn't have setting spray.
Exactly. They didn't have Urban Decay back then, like...
You know? No oil control.
Bring that crap all over. Stay in place, all nighter, man. But at this, you know, going into that, just keeping that feminine, you know, that feministic viewpoint, and I wonder if that kind of made the women struggle as well, when they were trying to figure out all of these things in the war efforts. But really, once again, just God, Black women need to get so much recognition, and I'm so glad we just keep giving them this recognition on the podcast, because they paved the way once again to desegregate something else. Like, yes, Jackie Robinson definitely laid that line in 1947. But as we learned, like Olivia Taylor, owning men, you know, Onegro men's baseball club, as well as Effie Manley, even though she co-owned it with her husband. But like, come on. And then they paved the way for this. And then having these amazing Black women come out and play in these leagues and then also eventually get inducted to the Hall of Fame and just really just keep pushing forward. And I think it's just, it's amazing. And I'm so happy that we do these like little deep dives, even though I'm sure it's annoying for listeners when we're like, click, 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 click. Oh, wait, here's this topic. And, you know, like this part of Wikipedia or whatever article we're reading. But those are my final thoughts, because who runs the world? Girls.
Girls. I agree with everything that you're saying, and I hope our listeners don't mind us doing that, because we want to give them well-researched, well-rounded information. I think that's, like, you know, part of our background working at the Henry Ford Museum in Greenfield Village, is that we just want to, you know, deep dive into these conversations. But I'm going to go, like, all 30 for 30 ESPN version on this, because my final thoughts is that this just proves that even in wartime, baseball is America's game.
Oh, for sure.
Like, it is America's pastime. And it doesn't matter if you are white, Black, male, female. Everybody played this game. It was a morale booster at the time. So much paving of ways have happened. And they just hit a home run and ran with it. And shameless baseball pun there, but you know what, I low-key I'm kind of jealous of the women who played with the men, you know, Tony, Mammy. They got to wear pants, man. Come on, sliding super easy. I'd slide all day in that thing. But no, I think I completely agree that we need more recognition, and we need more we need more information. And I think it's absolutely just astronomically incredible that women were owning baseball clubs in the 1920s.
Yes.
When, you know, they couldn't necessarily go into a soda shop and buy the same drink the person in front of them was drinking. It baffles my mind, but you know what? I feel like it just shows you how powerful sports are.
Yes. And how powerful women are.
Be powerful. We be balling up in here. No, I can't say that. It's fine. I try. But anyway, those are my final thoughts on it. Shameless plug for our Instagram, for our Women on War podcast. If you haven't followed us, please give us a like, share with your friends. And also our women's baseball team that we also support, the South Bend Blue Sox on Instagram. You can follow them. We put up really silly reels all the time, and we post really awesome photos trying to be educational at the same time about the league, for both sides, both Negro and the All-American girls side. So we, again, are just trying to bring you guys as much well-rounded researched information as we can. But I'm gonna do a little switcheroo this week on our outro music.
But wait,
are you ready for it?
Next week?
Oh.
I am. But what's our topic for next week?
I don't think we decided. You know what? Mystery grab bag for our people. Oh, you have one.
Okay. I was going to suggest, yeah. I mean, we're going to jump into like the 21st century for this one, but because we are going into, we've been talking how powerful women have been in opening up different roles. I think we should talk about women in combat, like combat arms. Bring it into the 21st century.
I have a lot of thoughts. Let's go. But
I was going to say, I have a lot of thoughts on this, and they actually kind of go back and forth. But for a heads up for all listeners, I researched the crap out of this in my undergrad. So when it was happening, too. So
it's going to be the Alyssa episode since I went from 0 to 60 real fast in this episode. So look at her. She's stretching. Like, I'm ready. But here we go.
Let's do it.
Ladder up, hear that call. The time has come for one and all to play ball. We're the members of the All-American League. We come from cities near and far. We got Canadians, Irish ones, and Swedes.